Today's News Talk Radio, TNT, with Joseph Arthur and his Technicolor Dreamcast.
Good evening, and this comes from Mark Crispin Miller, professor of propaganda, former professor of propaganda at NYU, a great friend of mine. It comes from his Substack. This isn't new information, he says, to those who have been paying close attention, but the fact that it's finally getting acknowledged by a highly respected medical journal is a breakthrough. Several recent studies have indicated the COVID-19 vaccines actually increase the risk of contracting the disease over time, but these studies have been ignored or even debunked by corporate media and big pharma for months. Now they'll have to contend with a new study published in the highly respected New England Journal of Medicine. This study was huge in scale, sifting through data collected from over 100,000 people infected by Omicron variant. And it lends credibility to the statistical significance of the findings, which are absolutely startling. Here are the key points. Those who have been fully vaccinated with two shots from Moderna or Pfizer are more likely to contract COVID-19 than those who have not been vaccinated at all. Booster shots offer protection approximately equal to natural immunity, but the benefits wane after 2 to 5 months. Natural immunity lasts for at least 300 days, which is the length of the study. It likely lasts much longer. This jibes with the current narrative coming from Big Pharma and their minions in government and corporate media that the jabs are supposed to mitigate the effects, but even that claim has been called into question, as recent studies indicate the vaccinated may be dying even more than the unvaccinated, according to the expose. The government of Canada has confirmed that the vaccinated population account for 4 in every 5 COVID-19 deaths to have occurred across the country since the middle of February 2022, and 70% of those deaths have been among the triple vaccinated population. Despite the scope of the study and the credibility of the source, it will not receive any attention from corporate media. It is imperative that our readers get the word out, because this is an absolute narrative buster for Big Pharma. Now more than ever, we must alert the people of the truth, because we are on the verge of seeing millions of children under the age of 5 years old injected. I think actually 6 months, six month old. The good news is we've seen more vaccinated people becoming receptive to the truth. That's promising. Let's hope that's true. That's anecdotal based on what I'm seeing online and the correspondence I receive, but I believe there are more people who are becoming skeptical of government's unhinged push for universal vaccinations. If we can share more news that will keep them from getting boosted, and more importantly, keep them from jabbing their children, then it's a worthwhile effort. If this is, as I believe, part of a nefarious plan to control people and enact globalist elites' depopulation agenda, then it behooves us to prevent as many people as possible from getting boosted. The science seems to indicate more shots mean more damage, so limiting exposure is important. We're going to need allies if things continue down this road. The fewer booster-addicted Americans, the better. Well, that comes from Mark Crispin Miller, and I'm going to agree with him that the narrative is certainly crumbling like a light shining through the dark clouds we've all been living in and through. How they are still trying to push this disaster on six-month-olds is nuts. How any parent would go along with that is more insane still. But we must get the word out. We must keep speaking, keep being loud with our voices of dissent. The enemy is down and bleeding. There is a shift you can feel in the air. They are losing hold of the public mind. And the unfortunate results of these jabs are going to be cropping up to further decimate the narrative all the time. It's the sad reality of this nasty agenda we've all had the misfortune and fortune to live through. Misfortune is obvious. So much unnecessary death and injury. Imagine, if you will, had the response been to promote health and self-empowerment and safe and effective treatments such as ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine. Those that demonize those protocols, those that were complicit, I guess, have a hard time sleeping at night, because they must know that when more of the majority wakes up to what's happened here, they will be held accountable. And when the media shifts on them to cover their own behinds, those bad actors will be left facing a public with murder in their eyes. Think of Nuremberg. The exact same scenario happened when power falls. especially when it's based on a lie and has led to as much disaster as this has. People will be living with the weight of loved ones dying in isolation unnecessarily, and all those ghosts will come back with fire in their eyes for the ones who perpetuated this atrocity. And I say fortunate because ultimately this will lead to an awakening of the human spirit and soul to become more evolved, ultimately more empowered, an up-leveling of consciousness. I mean, what could be more profound than living through something like that? The price of it has been high and obviously may grow higher still, but there is a light at the end of the dark tunnel and it's getting brighter all the time. You're listening to TNT.
Checking off the boxes.
Established, reputable.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Scott Sharon lost his daughter Grace, but he's on a mission to help others from that fate. Scott Sharon, he ain't lost his faith. He's gonna speak on it to honor his daughter Grace.
Welcome, Scott. How you doing, my friend? Nice to have you back on.
Hey, I'm doing well. Thank you. I always enjoyed that introduction. The musical introduction, and it's good to be back. Thank you.
Yeah, I liked this week's one better than last week's one. It felt more, a little bit more focused. But so listen, I guess I didn't really get a chance to read the article, but I just saw an email that said you made the cover of the Epoch Times. I never know how to say it. Is it Epoch or Epoch? Epoch. Epoch.
E-P-O-C-H.
Y'all know what I'm talking about. Epoch Times. It's an odd name. I got to look that up. Tell us what the article said, and congratulations for getting the story out there. That's kind of amazing.
Yeah, it was. They were just wonderful to work with too. So, you know, they focused a little bit on the billboard campaign that we have going on, but then they drilled down what we have been really working on, and that's. Like you said it in the intro, we're trying to get the word out. Well, what we're working on specifically to get the word out is the research is all pointing to genocide, and the way they took Grace out with end of life meds and a DNR is already the standard of care in the UK. It's state sanctioned. So the doctors in the UK are allowed to put DNR orders on the elderly without their permission and without the family's permission and use end-of-life meds. So in Grace's case, they used end-of-life meds and a DNR without our permission. Both of those are illegal here. They did them anyway, but this is going to become the standard of care. And, you know, everybody is familiar with remdesivir and ventilators, meaning the ones who are in the know, but they're not familiar with this end-of-life meds and DNR, and we're on a mission to get that word out so people wise up, and hopefully we can stop this.
All right, well, let me just say, I haven't heard you I've interviewed, this is the third time, and I don't think heard you describe them as end-of-life medicines. Now, when you described the protocol they gave Grace, my reaction was, well, that's obviously, you know, say quickly again what they gave her.
They gave her Precedex, lorazepam, and morphine.
You know, and so Precedex is to put people down for surgery. And so, and then morphine, obviously, on top of that. Yeah, it's an end-of-life protocol. And DNR, for people that don't know, is do not resuscitate. So... yeah, there it is in black and white. Yeah, the intro I just read from Mark Crispin Miller, I'm friends with him, and he's been describing this as a genocide for a long time now. So it does seem like the narrative is shifting, though, and that people are waking up, and that you know, I don't know. I think there's going to, we're going to reach a point where the narrative dramatically shifts. There's going to be like a point where it just automatically, like if a stock, the way I can relate to it is crypto, which is weird, I guess. But like when a crypto coin or something all of a sudden shoots up or goes down, it's like a sudden shift to one direction. And I really think that's about to happen with this. And when it does, what happens in those scenarios, the reason I relate it to crypto is that that makes everybody respond. And it makes everybody suddenly sell, 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 sell. So it keeps going down, down, down. So when the narrative shifts, what's going to happen is there's going to be a big shift. And then all of a sudden, all these people on the sidelines that have been afraid to speak up are going to start speaking up. News organizations are going to try to save their butts and they're going to start reporting the truth. You know, people are going to see the writing on the wall and it's going to be like people falling all over themselves to try to get on the right side of history. And once that happens, it's going to be dramatic because we're still pre that. Like it's like bubbling up, but there's this pressure happening. And it's just like stories like yours, you getting on the cover of the Epoch Times, and just on and on it goes. Justin Bieber's face, you know, just, you know, from the light side of it all the way to the most tragic side of it, you know, it just accumulates. And at a certain point, the narrative just breaks.
And boy, I sure hope that you are right on that. I mean, I have that sense, but I am so in it. You know, it's like the forest through the trees thing. I am so in it right now. I'm so awake and I'm just working every day on Grace's case. But like you had mentioned in the intro, reading your friend's narrative about the six month old being able to get the jab now. And I listened to a critique of the FDA trials. I mean, the thing is, it's so, you can't make up what they did. You know, the trial makes no sense. The placebo group did 600% better than the vaccine group in the child trials. And the control group, so the placebo group, which was the control group, at the end, after 6 weeks, they vaccinated them all. So then there's no control group anymore. And somehow that gets approved. It makes no sense.
For a population that has virtually no chance of dying from the supposed disease that they're supposedly protecting them from. It is bizarre. That part is bizarre because I have to think that the higher ups in this agenda know that that moment I'm speaking of is coming. So for them to sort of double down at this point towards 6-month-year-olds, I don't know, man. It like that in and of itself. I mean, even if you just took every other equation out of the, you know, the narrative crumbling, just them going for 6-month-year-olds is so weird right on the surface. You know, it's just like, what are you doing? That's insane.
The thing, I agree with that 100%. The thing that is more insane is parents lining their kids up for it. That's why, I mean, that's why we're out telling the story every day. I mean, I gotta keep going because, you know, Grace's death is not in vain. We are literally saving lives. I received a dozen people reaching out to me from our website yesterday. I haven't even been able to respond to them all, but it's just fantastic. People are sharing. These stories are, some of them are substantially worse than Grace's.
I want you to get into some of those and also review a little bit of Grace's story too that you've told on here a couple times already, but it bears repeating at least in part. So, but yeah, that's interesting. And your story right there is an example of kind of what I'm talking about. Look, you've been going through doing interviews, getting the story out there. And then look, you had a major hit, you know, with Epoch Times. And then all of a sudden there's this bigger momentum. And that's the thing. You can't stop the truth. You can pause it, obviously, and you can cover it with lies, but The truth is coming like a freight train, baby. That's a song. That's a song. Hold on. The truth is coming like a freight train, baby. The truth is coming like a freight train. The truth is coming like a freight train, baby. The truth is coming like a freight train. Okay, I had to do it. So tell us some of the stories you've been getting that are actually more devastating than Grace's. I'm curious because the story of Grace, and not to be insensitive, but it is rather devastating, my friend. So I'm curious to see how it could be even worse than that, if you can share any of those anecdotes.
So one that is top of mind that has been bothering me since we heard it was one of the hosts reached out to me and asked me to talk with this dad. And so my wife and I called him. He's from California. He's 43 years old. Him and his wife have a 10, 8, and 5-year-old. And he describes her as the most physically fit person he's ever met. Regular blood pressure of 95 over 65. A personal trainer. No heart disease.
His wife,
no,
you mean?
Nothing in there. His wife.
You're talking about,
yes,
his wife? Okay.
And she,
yeah.
Yep. He's talking. Thank you. He's talking about his wife. She died. And
oh, my Lord.
I mean, he's devastated. She died in early January, right after Christmas. And she was dehydrated. They had a doctor who was good. I mean, he knew what was going on, so he didn't want them to take her to the hospital. So he said, call an ambulance. When the ambulance got to their home, they would not administer fluids because all of her vitals were perfect. And he told the medical people, she's just dehydrated, just give her fluids. They wouldn't. So they took her to the hospital.
Ugh.
So he called her mother to meet the ambulance at the hospital so he could take the three boys and drop them off someplace else. By the time he got to the hospital, she was already admitted and on a ventilator. So the mother-in-law was instructed to call the doctor, and the doctor would have walked the medical team through the way to treat her because she was under his care. Well, she did that. They refused to call the doctor. By the time the husband got there, she was already ventilated. He tried to get them to call the doctor. They wouldn't. Over a 9-hour period, they gave her 3 doses of remdesivir, and she was dead in 9 hours. So you think that you're strong, healthy, you know, you've got this down. There's no way the hospital is going to take advantage of you. You know, Grace was disabled. They killed her while we were there. You know, she was... as one host said, she died a martyr's death. She was obedient unto death. A lot of elderly people, you know, they seclude them. The family members can't come in and advocate, and they kill them. So this lady is a perfectly healthy person. I've heard this with, there's several people who I know personally whose husbands have died, and all in their late 30s, early 40s. Strong guys, and they got on the remdesivir vent protocol and it killed them. But in those cases, they extended their lives for 2-3 weeks for the financial gain. In this case, of course, she was not vaccinated. And the reason I say that is because, you know, a lot of the things that I see is that the unvaccinated are lower on the totem pole when they check into a hospital. In fact, the medical staff have an attitude towards the unvaccinated. And so they did not listen to any instruction whatsoever and put this woman to death in 9 hours.
That's insane. Yeah, that's so she apparently, I guess, had COVID and was dehydrated. That's the scenario they
were. No, she didn't. What's interesting is she didn't have COVID. She had COVID a few weeks prior, and they, of course, they tested her and said she had COVID, but you know, the husband knows she didn't have COVID. You mean these tests, of course, they're testing to make sure that you have COVID so they can get their financial bonus. But you know, she obviously didn't have COVID. She was already over it a couple of weeks prior.
So why was she, you know, not that it matters, I guess, but I'm just curious as to how she got so dehydrated that they had to call the ambulance in the first place.
Well, he said it was the combination of Christmas, lack of sleep. She was an exercise fanatic, so she's exercising, trying to keep too many balls in the air, not taking the fluids that she should, and she got dehydrated. So much.
And passed out or something? Okay, so
she passed out.
And they freaked out. Yeah, and so they couldn't figure out a way to get her hydrated. I'm telling you, those concentrated trace minerals that you can get at health food stores, you can get them on Amazon too. I resist saying that, but it's like, because you're not supposed to support them. But you can. It's a big blue bottle of trace elements and really good for hydration. All the different salts you need, potassium, if you're ever going to do a water fast, which you should, because that resets your immune system and makes you a supercharged superhero of the freedom revolution. We'll be right back after these brief words with Scott Shera on TNT.
God, you're amazing. You're a much better listener than my wife. You're always there for me. I think I may be in love.
Where is she?
It's not what it seems. I was talking to...
Who's the tramp I heard you talking to?
That was my Alexa, sweetie.
Well, she sounds like a tramp.
Fall in love with news and talk all over again with your smart device. Just tell it to play.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
I will be right by your side.
Women can have it all, including heart attacks. But symptoms like jaw pain, nausea, unusual fatigue, dizziness, and backache are often different and more subtle than for a man. The fact is, heart disease is the number one killer of women. Know the signs. Learn more at getheartchecked.org. From Women's Heart Alliance, in partnership with Women Heart.
Roxanne Watson is on a mission to have more people sign up as organ, eye, and tissue donors. What drives her? Roxanne received a heart transplant made possible by an organ donor.
I decided that day to devote myself to signing up the most people in the United States. That's my goal.
Now she's a powerful force for good. What could you make possible as an organ, eye, and tissue donor? Leave behind the gift of life. Go to organdonor.gov. U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Health Resources and Services Administration.
We need a recalibration of government.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
The truth is coming like a freight train, baby. And Scott Shera is on the train. Ooh, the truth is coming like a freight train, baby. And Scott Shera is on the train. Ooh, ooh, yeah. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Welcome back, Scott. So that's a crazy story. So rest in peace to that lady. That's brutal. And the fact that she has three children is just, it's impossible. It's just like this dang life, man, this planet Earth. I love it and I hate it at the same time. That's why the Bible says, make sure you love God. You know, there's something, I was listening to this Prager speech, you know, Dennis Prager, and he was talking about, he's great with the Bible and he's not even Christian. He's a Jew, but he's like put more people onto Christianity than any other Christian in the world. And he was talking about how that's why the Bible says you have to love God or something. I forget exactly what it says, but it's because, and he was saying it's because it's hard to love God. And I love that. That's so great, you know, because it kind of, anything like that, that inspires you to know that you don't have to be this like perfect little angel walking around on earth. It is a challenge to love God. It's a challenge to love all the loss and all of the whole thing of this place that we find ourselves on. And he was bringing it up by an example of saying the Bible never says love your children or make sure you love your children, because that just comes naturally, was his theory. And he also says you have to honor your mother and father. That's a big one too. So there you go, man. What are some of the other stories that you've received from your Epoch Times cover story?
Well, one of the ones that we referred to Epoch Times is in that story. A lady called us about, it was roughly 4 weeks ago now. She had heard Grace's story, and she had just received the records from her Down syndrome daughter's death, and they had put an illegal DNR on her the second day she was in the hospital. And we suspected this, you know, when we first dug into Grace's case, I thought, you know what, I bet you Grace's case is the first one they've been caught. And I've heard of a number of DNR situations, and not exactly like Grace's or this lady from the East Coast who called us, but one man from church told me when we were talking about DNRs, when he checked into the hospital for COVID, they told him by checking in, this document you're signing includes a DNR. And he said, I was glad my wife wasn't there because she would have never put up with that. So he signed over a DNR as a condition of entering the hospital. And then an attorney friend of mine called me this last week and told me about an 80-year-old friend of his that he calls a near genius. And he was in the hospital and saw, when he woke up, he saw they had a DNR on him, a DNR bracelet. And so he asked childlike questions to the doctor about what is this. Of course, he knew all the time because he's a near genius, and the doctor started dancing around. And
hold on, I got to comment on that real quick. I want to comment on that. That's funny, yes. Dude. That he was it's so genius as well to ask childlike questions and play dumb. I love that scenario. Like, hey, dude, what is perfect. This, man? Like, what's this DNR? What does that stand for? I love that.
Anyway, when the doctor started doing his dance, he called him out on it, and you know, and he told him it's illegal that you put this on me. But I actually would like to walk through this chain of events that we're working on. So we're working very hard to lay out the side
Scott,
by side.
Let me comment. Let me comment before you go into that. I want you to shift into that. But just I want to comment on this DNR thing that you've been bringing up, and how right there is the agenda. I mean, what on earth, why are you doing illegal DNRs on people unless you have strange ID? There's no reason to do that unless you intend on wanting to not resuscitate. Like, I don't understand how to even follow that logic to any kind of conclusion that makes that paints the hospital in a good light. I don't even see how they could, like, what did they say to your genius friend was the reason? Did they have one, or did they just sidewind?
They sidestepped it, and then he called them out, and they obviously then took it off. But I mean,
but they didn't give they don't come. My point is, do they come up with some kind of reason? Like, oh, that's just because blah de blah, and I can't think of it. So that's why I'm saying blah de blah, because I cannot think of a reason that's not dark.
Well, they told him that, well, you weren't doing very well, and then blah, blah, blah. But I mean, of course you're not doing well. You're in a hospital. That doesn't give you a license to put a DNR on the person. Yeah, this started to get floated. Yeah, this got floated back in March of 20, right after COVID got introduced to us. It was floated for the first time in the news, and you know that it's actually been floated before that. So with Obamacare, they introduced the idea of allocation of care. So allocation of care sounds logical. You know, it's like a triage situation. You know, you have limited number of care and limited number of medical staff, so we've got to allocate care. But you know how
they always paint it with pretty words like that. Allocation of care, correct. Planned Parenthood. It's always like the language of these things is always like meticulously decided upon. It's allocation of care. That means we're going to make sure not to resuscitate you if anything gets slightly hairy, or, you know, or we might even give you end of life medication just because, you know. And you were saying earlier too in a different interview how you thought they were targeting people, primarily the elderly, diabetics, and people with Down syndrome.
Yeah, and I believe it's the elderly and the disabled in those general classifications. And we're getting very close to being able to prove it. And I'll just walk through what we've discovered so far. So This allocation of care idea is how it got introduced in the United States, you know, with Obamacare back in the 2008 range, 2009. But it's obviously been introduced way before that, which I'll get to. Well, then, you know, with COVID, they implemented with the CARES Act all these financial incentives to hospitals. So they dangled the big carrot in front of the hospitals, and most of them bit. And, you know, from a macro point of view, financially, the country has 39% of its budget. So our taxpayer money goes to fund the elderly and the disabled. The annual report of the trustees for the Medical Insurance Trust Fund. So, I mean, these are the people who run the trust fund for Medicare. The annual report dated August 31st of 2021 the conclusion. I'm just going to read the conclusion. The financial projections in this report indicate a need for substantial changes to address Medicare's financial challenges. I believe the substantial changes that they're requesting are in fact being implemented right now because of the fact that the disabled and the elderly account for 39% of the budget. This DNR thing was floated for the first time on March 31st, 20 in an article in Stateline magazine. The UK, I think I've said this to you before, the UK, this is already the state-sanctioned standard of care, the end-of-life meds and DNRs. So, you know, it's obviously coming here. But here's the thing that is really interesting is that this last week I was looking into the Adolf Eichmann trial, and the conclusion of that trial, you know, we know the Milgram obedience experiment happened after that trial, but the conclusion that they came to is the idea of a banality of evil. So banality means common. So evil is so common, you don't even recognize it. Right. And so I believe that's what's happening now. I mean, you have evil being perpetrated by the establishment, obviously, but the establishment's tentacles include people in lab coats. It includes news reporters who are not even reporters anymore. So if they've got the entire society in on it, other than the few people who are awake. And, you know, like as you introduced the show, it seems like more and more people are becoming awake, which that would be fantastic. But this banality of evil is so widespread. Think about how many decades they've already convinced us that the disabled don't deserve to live. So right now, 67% of Down syndrome children are already aborted. When a young person gets pregnant, they all get amnios because their doctor recommends them. And then their doctor recommends an abortion if the amnio shows anything negative relative to the baby. And similarly with the elderly, they've been put in nursing homes for decades and just not dealt with. Versus when I was a kid, I mean, you took care of your parents. That just was the standard. So, you know, that banality of evil concept, I think it's real.
And do you think that the people that are complicit with the banality of evil justify it by, allocation of care philosophy? Like, well, we have to do this because there's only so many people we can save, and we can't really tell the minions that this is going on, so we have to play dumb and do things underhandedly. In other words, is that how insidious this banality of evil, like, you know, transcends logic and transcends people's, you know, normal moral codes to where they can perpetuate these sort of things?
I think it absolutely does. The Milgram obedience experiment proved that.
What is that? Explain the Milgram obedience experiment for us.
So in 1963, this experiment was conducted where they had, I believe, 40 participants. It was set up that it looked random, but it was all pre-scripted. So 20 of the participants were people in a room that had a series of buzzers that they would push that would give a jolt of X volts to the person in the other room. All the people in the other room were hooked up to leads, but they were all actors. So they weren't really jolted at all, but they were acting like they're jolted. And then they had an instructor. And when the person would answer, when the person would answer a question wrong, the instructor would tell them to jolt them. Well, the jolts, the voltage got all the way up to death. So if they answered six questions in a row wrong, they would be instructed to kill the actor. Of course, the person didn't know it was an actor. So, I mean, it was a real experiment. And 2/3 of the people for answering questions wrong because they were instructed to do so killed the other person. I mean, that's hard to grasp.
That is insane. So, I mean, it's kind of also darkly funny. It just is, dude. I hate to laugh at that, but it's so absurd that is my response. And plus, because I know they're actors, I'm just imagining them going like, you know, it's just like, it's too crazy, dude. Like, so when they answered the sixth question wrong, did they like do the buzz dance and then act like they died?
I don't. Well, they had them in a different room, so I don't know the answer.
Oh, so they weren't like see, in my head it was like you were watching them through like some kind of one of those like sort of you see them, they don't see you. They're in another room in a glass door or something.
They were here. Oh, so yeah, they were hearing.
They could hear them.
Right.
So, but did and they knew that the last vault or the last jolt was a death shot, right? They were aware
correct.
Of that. And then, so what's the aftermath of that? You just killed somebody because they answered six questions wrong. Then what? You're like, okay, do I, you know, like, did we get any like follow up? Like, dude, how do you feel about yourself now? I'm assuming that they were then told, hey, we didn't really kill somebody, but you just complied with killing somebody. So have a nice day, I guess. Now, what do you feel about yourself? It's just a very odd experiment on so many levels, particularly for the people that have to like live with themselves knowing that they killed somebody because they answered six questions wrong. I would love to hear follow-up interviews with these people.
Yeah, I would too. I mean, I can't answer that question, but I know that they surmised that the reason the people did it was because they perceived that the authority figure was the one who would take the responsibility for their actions.
Ah. Wow. That's okay. Yeah, the light bulb just went off in this guy's head when you just said that. Like how the significance of it. I see. You're right. This is the psychological sort of hiccup that this whole thing is playing on in people. That people don't feel responsible. They're doing like horrific things, but for them, they're just following orders. But that's the Nuremberg thing. Goes back to Nuremberg.
That's exactly. Like, that is, and that's you what know. I believe we are in, and that's what we're working
right,
on with
me
our
too.
Current research. Yeah. I want to share something because your sense of humor, now that I understand your sense of humor a little bit, and you're saying they always do that with the words. I have to share this because it's so funny. So
go for it.
Well, the CARES Act stands for COVID Aid Relief and Economic Security. So it's CARES, right? So, I mean, they have the acronym, you know, there's nothing right. caring about it. In the UK, their NIH is called NICE, which is the National Institute for Health and Clinical Excellence. Remember, in the UK, they already state sanction end of life meds and DNR. So nothing nice about it. Right.
So it's the opposite of nice, my friend. That would be the polar opposite of nice. Yeah.
So long now for your sense of humor. I'm doing this just for you, Joseph. So a Thank long you. Time ago when I was when I studied to be a CPA, and I don't remember, one of the professors introduced me to an acronym called BOHICA. Have you heard of that one before? Uh-huh.
Sounds so vaguely BOHICA, familiar, but you're going to have to remind me.
I'm going to remind you. So BOHICA applies to all of these laws that they put in place. And it stands for bend over, here it comes again.
You made that one up, Scott. Listen, we got to go to a quick break. We'll be right back. You didn't? No, it doesn't really stand for that, does it? Bend over, here it comes again? Come on, that's a joke. That's a joke. I was born in the day, but I wasn't born yesterday. We'll be right back with Scott Shera on TNT.
China's authoritarian, tyrannical COVID zero policy worked perfectly, according to a professor.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
Professor Alan Wu, director of the Center for Public Health Research at Nanjing University, claimed that China's COVID policies were the model of the world.
The zero tolerance policy has been working very well. It actually put the virus under a strict control, and you avoid a large scale outbreak and a large number of deaths. But in the Omicron, the situation is quite different. The virus is so transmissible, so infectious.
Yes, you heard that right. Zero COVID in China was a great success until that nasty Omicron came along and exposed it for the failure that it was. Lockdowns kill. Tyrannies kill, COVID policy killed, until the world realizes that COVID lockdowns were one of the greatest humanitarian crises we've faced. We are doomed to repeat it. For the Morano Minute, this is Mark Morano on TNT Radio.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Government today.
They're not human. They ought to be destroyed.
It's like all the children from the Village of the Damned grew up and went into politics.
You can't stop us, you know.
Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Culmination. That's the word on my mind. I want to make it an acronym, but I can't think of one. Crazy understanding. I don't know. I can't even spell it off the top of my head. But culmination is what's happening here, Scott. And that's what we were talking about at the beginning. And the thing is, man, is you're such a part of this, because if you guys are on some Nuremberg type stuff, which you should be, and you know, it's completely justified with what's happened to you and so many others. Think of it, man. Think of where you're going with your case, and you're a freedom fighter in your neck of the woods. We're over here on TNT spreading this truth all the time. There's Peter McCullough. It's just building and building and building. Dr. Robert Malone, Brett Weinstein, even Russell Brand is always hitting people over the head with truth. And, you know, the culmination effect will happen. People will, the narrative will shift, and then all of a sudden your case will come and the whole thing will crumble and you can see it. You know what I mean? Tell us about what's going on with your case and why you're feeling good about it.
So this last week we had the second meeting with the legal team. Tom Renz is heading up the legal team. Interestingly, a week ago, Sunday, I rode in a van to the airport with Dr. Peter McCullough, so I got to talk with him one-on-one for 45 minutes. Our flights happened to leave at the same time, and we were speaking at the same event. He was the headline speaker, and I was, of course, down the line. But it was, you know, it was humbling just to be on the same stage with him. But as God would have it, we rode in the same van together, so I got to talk with him one-on-one for 45 minutes.
Did you?
So he called me.
Did you tell him about? Did you tell him about Grace? Obviously.
Oh, of course. Yes. And
what did he say?
Story, because, well, he knows of thousands of cases, but I mean, he thought Grace's case was so egregious. I mean, he said, "I've got to get some people in Dallas for you to meet," and he gave me his personal cell phone number. He said, "Call me when you come down. You can stay at my house." I mean, he was just, of course, I'm not going to do that. But you know, it just was.
Well, you should,
wonderful,
dude. You should. I love that guy. He's been on the program a few times. He's an amazing, amazing man. And did he, was his assessment that it was in fact murder?
He did not go that far because we just didn't delve into it enough. I didn't give him enough details for him to conclude, but we talked about the legal case and you know, he gave me some great insight on the legal case. And I had asked him, I had corresponded with him over the week this last week, and he said, get a hold of me on the weekend. So I emailed him over the weekend and he called me Sunday morning and had the idea. He called it an error of commission, which is real interesting. He said, you can't win a Med-Mal case. And I had learned that already in some of the investigations. So I'll just give you the why, and then I'll go through this errors of commission idea. So with a Med-Mal case, early on in Grace's case, I talked with who I was referred to as the best medical malpractice attorney in Wisconsin. So I talked with him one evening, and he said, even in slam dunk cases like Grace's appears to be, you can't win. I said, well, what's the reason? And he said, let me explain with a case of my own. He said, I had a case where the doctor sewed up a sponge inside the patient and we lost. I said, well, how could you possibly lose? How could you possibly lose? And he said, we had 10 expert witnesses and they brought up.
I know why. It's because he was operating on SpongeBob. That's such a dumb joke. Dude, sorry. Well, keep going. Keep
there's got to be a song with that, for sure.
Don't operate on SpongeBob unless you're going to leave a sponge inside. You got to laugh. You got to laugh, Scott, or else it gets too depressing. So anyway, keep going with your story. I'm sorry. No more interruptions.
You know, my daughter Grace had such a sense of humor that I miss everything about her. But if I had to say one thing I missed the most was her sense of humor. Oh my gosh, it was just wonderful. I thought we would do stand up comedy in Vegas sometime, and she'd be the first Down syndrome comic, and I would just be her assistant. She was funny.
What a beautiful dream.
Anyway, so the medical malpractice thing, if they bring so many experts, you can't win the case. So, I mean, Tom Renz's team is working through those particulars, but Peter McCullough said, have them look at the errors of commission. So you'll find this funny, you know, so just to be bluntly honest. So I didn't know what errors of commission was, and I wasn't going to ask him. I didn't want to let him know I was that dumb. So I looked it up afterward. And
what is it?
I'm going to tell you now. So what errors of commission,
we're all that dumb, Scott, come on, tell us.
Is that they should have known there were treatments available. So you can't just follow these blind orders. And so he brought that up. I thought, yeah, that's exactly right. That is another, there's so many legal theories in Grace's case. So errors of commission, her disability rights were violated, civil rights violation. If you process a civil rights violation, because effectively the hospitals are now owned by the government. So then it becomes a civil rights violation because even though they're not legally owned, they're literally under the government's authority, doing the bidding of the government. Then, of course, there's Med-Mal and then intentional torts, which is where the DNR falls in place. So,
well, you know, the other part, dude, is that it's like to put a sponge in somebody, it's like that's one thing. And yeah, you shouldn't be able to get away with that. But that also seems more like an honest mistake, you know. As sort of heinous of a mistake as that obviously is. But in your case, for Grace, she got end-of-life medicine, and that's on record. You have record of that. There was an illegal DNR. You have record of that. There's so many nefarious shenanigans going on in your case that seem to me worse than accidentally leaving a sponge.
Well, I, of course, agree with that, not just because she's my daughter. I mean, that's why Tom Renz is taking on the case. This will be the first first case. I mean, this will be a national test case, so we're expecting it to be a fairly big deal. And you know, they're working on it now. They have a whole fleet of attorneys working on it to make sure that we nail this. I mean, the goal is to win, not just file a claim, but to win. And you know, it's going up against Ascension Hospital System, who has $30 billion in cash reserves. So, I mean, this is, you know, they certainly have the horsepower to fight us, but we have got
a different kind of horsepower. You have the truth. That's its own horsepower.
Yep.
And
that's exactly,
you know, better
right.
To have, you know, the whole world against you and God for you is what, you know, pastors often say. You know, so you have the truth, you know, and man, imagine you guys win this case, and just even having the case happen is a kind of a win. But culmination, my friend, it's coming. You can feel it. You can feel the shift.
I really like that word. I think that makes a lot of sense. And that, you know, we're already seeing some of the shift. I mean, you mentioned it before, but when they start pointing fingers, you know, when somebody gets called out and then they start pointing fingers at somebody else, and some of that started happening this last week. And so that's all good.
What happened?
Going in the right direction. Well, somebody from Pfizer was in court, and they said that they pointed a finger at the FDA. I read the article. I wish I had it at my fingertips so I could quote you.
Okay, but that's exactly what I'm talking about. Can you imagine when this keeps shifting more and more, how many finger pointings are going to be, and people are going to bend over backwards to throw each other under the bus? You know,
that's exactly
and
right.
Again, all these voices on the sidelines that are terrified to speak from social shame are going to suddenly become, you know, given wings to fly, and all that like holding down what they want to say is going to just come bursting out of all these people. It's going to happen. I don't know when, but I think before we know it, it's going to happen.
Well, I certainly hope that you are right with that. Then this fight will really be not in vain. It's an awful lot of work, but I feel blessed to be part of it.
So, what are the next steps? You're with Tom Renz. You're having meetings. You're getting your case together. When can we look forward to hearing about victory?
Well, victory, I didn't even plant that seed with them to get that question. I mean, we're just looking at being able to assess all the medical records and organize the strategy in approximately 3 weeks. So that's the next step. So how that goes through and walks through the courts and all that, I mean, that's way over my pay grade, but I didn't cross that bridge with them. You know, just to they interviewed me as if I was on the stand yesterday, so then I could tell the entire story and all the attorneys could ask me questions at the same time, because that would save them a lot of time, because I've been through the records already. And so, you know, just so they could have all the high points and then know where they need to focus their efforts to get the backup.
Was that fun?
So that's what happened,
being interviewed as if you were in court? Was it a good experience?
I thought it was fine. I mean, it was, you know, obviously it's attorneys who are favorable to the case, but I mean, I know this case so well. I'm certainly not worried about being on the hot seat.
Right.
Yeah,
well, Scott, we're getting near the end.
At some point. Yeah, I would hope at some point I start getting grilled by the liberal media, because that would be the hot seat. You know, nobody wants to talk to me on the liberal side right now.
Not yet, but that day is coming. Scott Shara, tell people how to get in touch with you or how to help the case. And thank you again for coming on.
Well, thank you. Ouramazinggrace.net is the website. If you would like to help, we have a How Can You Help tab, and there's a Give, Send, Go setup. So if you're inclined to do that, now is the time. We're starting to raise money for the legal case. So thank you. Thanks for that opportunity, Joseph.
All right. Well, listen, man. Praise Jesus. I know you're a follower, so let's go ahead and give a little prayer. Praise Jesus. Please bless Scott Shara's case and bless us all with the truth coming out. You know, we're ready. We're ready to carry on with life when we weren't under this kind of wild, 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 I guess, genocide, man. Really. It's weird to say, but that's what it seems to be. All right, brother. Thanks, Scott.
Thank you.
All right, keep listening, everybody. We're on TNT. Be right back.